Czechs, Poles, Norwegian, Dutch, and Belgian have joined the causes with our own.
These are Hurricanes of a Czechoslovak squadron. They have the reputation of cool and daring pilots with numerous victories over the Luftwaffe.
The Poles were madmen, at least we thought they were. They couldn't care less about orders from the ground. If they could see the enemy, they'd attack him.
Fighting in England, and we're fighting for Poland as well, because we knew that the people over there are suffering.
We shall emulate our courage. If final victory rewards our toils, they shall share the gain.
Inside the Battle of Britain, from the Royal Air Force Benevolent Fund. The Battle of Britain began less than a year into the Second World War. German forces had swept across Europe, occupying much of the continent in just a few months. The Soviet Union and the United States of America had not yet entered the war. Great Britain stood alone in Europe, facing imminent invasion by the Germans. But it didn't fight alone. Thousands of people from across the Commonwealth and from Nazi-occupied countries came to Britain to fight by its side, bruised, battered, but not yet broken. I'm Victoria Taylor, a military historian specialising in British and German aviation. In this episode, we'll be hearing the stories of the RAF's international allies who joined the fight at this crucial moment in the Second World War. Episode 3, International Squadrons. During the Battle of Britain, a fifth of Fighter Command's frontline strength, nearly 600 pilots, came from overseas. Craig Murray, a curator at the Imperial War Museum at Duxford, tells us more about their backgrounds.
There was a large international element to the Battle of Britain as far as ground crews and squadrons. They're primarily, you have Australians, Canadians, New Zealanders, you have Czechs, Poles, South Africans. There's the odd American volunteer who's here. These international squadrons and the international content of the Battle of Britain, whether it be in these specific squadrons or scattered throughout RAF squadrons, were vitally important.
There were also pilots from the Caribbean and from Ireland, and also from northern and southern Rhodesia, now Zambia and Zimbabwe. As Nazi forces advanced through Europe, they were joined by fighters from Belgium, France, and Austria too. But the single largest group of non-British pilots in the Battle of Britain came from Poland. After the fall of Poland, tens of thousands of Polish personnel escaped the country, looking to continue the fight against the Germans. More than 2,000 of them came to Britain, whilst many more travelled to France. There, they reformed the Polish Air Force, ready to fight for the defence of France. Among them was Ryszard Kwiatkowski, a young aircraft fitter from Warsaw. His grandson is Jacek Mańka.
My grandfather, Ryszard Kwiatkowski, was a fitter, somebody who was responsible to put fuel in, oil in, basically, to get airplanes ready between sorties. So he was basically one of the lowest rank in the squadron. Before the war, he was just engineer at the beginning of his career. So he wasn't a soldier by profession. He was based around Warsaw. After a week of very heavy fighting, they withdrew, and the whole team had to escape to Romania. And then via Hungary and Yugoslavia, they made their way to France. In France, they reformed into a squadron. But then in the spring of 1940, Germany attacked France. And after relatively quick campaign, they made their way to Liverpool. That's where they arrived in June 1940.
By mid-1940, some 35,000 Polish airmen, soldiers and sailors had made their way to Britain, making up the largest foreign military force in the country after the French, as well as making it the largest Polish army ever formed abroad. Now, there were some 8,500 Polish airmen in Britain. Czechoslovak pilots joined the fight too. Eventually, there would be enough of them to form two dedicated Czechoslovak squadrons. The first Czechoslovak pilots touched down at RAF Hendon on the 17th of June 1940. The very next day, just a couple of weeks after the evacuation at Dunkirk, the Prime Minister Winston Churchill made a speech in Parliament, vowing that Britain and its international allies would continue the courageous French fight. He recorded the speech later for broadcast.
If we are now called upon to endure what they have been suffering, we shall emulate their courage. If final victory rewards our toils, they shall share the gain. Czechs, Poles, Norwegians, Dutch and Belgians have joined the causes with our own. All these shall be restored.
As Craig Murray describes, when the exhausted servicemen got to Britain, they saw it as their chance to fight back after so many defeats. They nicknamed Britain the Island of the Last Hope.
In the case of, say, the Poles and the Czechs, both countries have been invaded and very quickly defeated by the Germans. Many Poles and Czechs had then got to France and had started fighting with the French, and then again found themselves in the wrong end of a defeat by the Germans. In the case of the Poles, before the fall of France, there was over 2,000 Polish airmen had come to Britain, and then with the evacuations and the fall of France, you see another over 6,000 airmen from the Poles coming here. The Czechs have come to Poland to fight with the Poles, have lost there, have gone to France, and they've actually taken a further step than the Poles. They've been to Poland too. So these men have come to this sort of last man standing, if you will, in an attempt to sort of reverse this series of defeats. In the case of the Poles, they're sick of being beaten and they want to fight back, and they want to get up there and fight back soon. The next target on Hitler's list is to invade Britain, and it's a last place standing. So this is where they go, and this is how they end up being part of the whole Battle of Britain.
310 Squadron, the first Czechoslovak squadron, was formed in July 1940. The squadron's English motto, "We fight to rebuild," shows just how much was at stake for the men whose home countries were under Nazi occupation. One of the Czechoslovak airmen, pilot officer Stanislav Fefar, wrote in his diary, "I just want to sit in the cockpit of a British fighter as soon as this can possibly be arranged." In total, 88 Czechoslovak pilots flew in the Battle of Britain. 145 pilots flew for Poland, with half of them joining general RAF squadrons. The rest formed two dedicated Polish fighter squadrons within the RAF, 302 and 303. Eugene Sharman had served in the Polish Air Force in Poland and France. In Britain, he joined 303 Squadron.
"I thought we found another home. We thought people want to fight. And the attitude of British people so calm, and they were so friendly. We had Royal Air Force uniforms, except we had the Polish buttons and written Poland on the sleeves."
Despite the eagerness of the Poles and Czechoslovaks to join the fight, they faced resistance from the Royal Air Force at first. The Wehrmacht's swift occupation of Poland and much of Czechoslovakia, along with German propaganda about Polish ineptitude during the invasion, made the RAF leadership doubtful about their pilots' flying skills. The Poles had faced similar prejudice in France too, where only 10% of the available fighters had been used in the defence of France. However, as Craig Murray explains, British losses meant they were soon in desperate need of experienced pilots.
There was a feeling towards Polish and Czech pilots. They've lost easily against the Luftwaffe in their own countries. They've lost with the French. Perhaps they're not that good, but what use can they be? And I suppose there's an element of prejudice in there as well. They probably thought they're probably not much good, but Britain, the losses it's sustaining, manpower is its most vital resource, and it's the one that it really needs to preserve. And with this in mind, they start to reevaluate their opinions of Polish and Czech pilots, and they soon come to realise they are actually very, very good.
Before the Poles and Czechoslovaks entered the battle, however, there were more obstacles to overcome. One especially pressing concern was the language barrier, as Jacek Mańka explains.
Pre-World War II, Europe had French as a first language and probably German as a second. So very few Poles could communicate in English. They could communicate quite often in French, but it didn't work in 1940 in UK, obviously. But there was a very strong tie of doing the same thing together. And in 1940, I think the overall impression on both sides was just very positive.
The men were expected to have basic English before they were sent up to fight and received intensive English language classes. British officers were also assigned to their squadrons, teaming up with their foreign counterparts to aid communication with the controllers. Craig Murray says there were technical challenges too, with new aircraft to learn. On British planes, you pushed the throttle forward to accelerate, while on Polish planes, you pulled it backwards.
They also had to learn to read gauges in miles an hour, not kilometres an hour, and fuel gauges in gallons rather than litres. One of the other problems was some aircraft they were used to didn't have retractable undercarriages that come up and down, obviously, when you land. Some of them had that old-style fixed undercarriages where the wheels are always down, and there was just the odd mishap where they forgot as they came into land and ended up bellying the aircraft down with its wheels still up. But that's just the sort of getting used to this thing, and it's not anything to do with the ability of the pilot to fly. It's just used to a new type of aircraft that happened to some RAF pilots as well.
To the frustration of some international pilots, the RAF also devised a way to train them in British flying tactics without sending them into the air. The pilots of 302 and 303 squadrons were ordered to ride tricycles in flying formations around airfields, all equipped with radio, speed indicators and compasses. Eventually, however, they were allowed to venture into the fight. On the 15th of August 1940, 302 Squadron was declared operational. First based in East Yorkshire, they initially patrolled the less frequently attacked east coast of England. It was only transferred south in September 1940. Nevertheless, 302 Squadron made an invaluable contribution to the 203 confirmed kills by Polish pilots during the Battle of Britain. 303 Squadron scored its first victory while still officially non-operational, when on the 30th of August, Flying Officer Ludwig Paszkiewicz shot down a German aircraft during a training flight. The squadron was declared operational the next day. Jacek Mańka's grandfather, Richard, was a fitter in 303 Squadron, based at RAF Northolt. He says the team worked every minute they could.
There was a will to fight and to win. During Battle of Britain, there was little time to do anything, you know, to go out, and they were really focused on fighting. There's very well-known report written by a station commander from Northolt who stated that Polish are different from British because they just don't drink. They just don't go out after the fight to pub and drink beer there. They were focused on fixing airplanes, so overnight even pilots were coming and helping them. They were not in a mood to go out to a bar. They worked very hard nighttime to be able to fix the planes. They were both shot and both have different malfunctions, but the planes were very needed. So Polish engineers from aviation factories, but not only, they were working very hard, even with some help from pilots, overnight to get airplanes ready. After airplanes were back from a mission, they had to be rearmed and refueled quickly. New oxygen bottle had to be installed and so on. So basically, they had to prepare another sortie. If an airplane was damaged beyond use for that day, they were quickly taken to hangars, and in the squadron, there was a very strong will to fix this airplane. Quite often, they were even circumnavigating some rules to be able to fix the plane quickly in the unit. They were very proficient in their trade, so from time to time, the British inspectors were absolutely amazed next morning when they see that an airplane shot down almost to pieces was ready to fight again the next morning.
The foreign fighters, in particular the Czechoslovaks and the Poles, soon developed a reputation for fearlessness and devotion to duty. A Czech-language BBC news report from 1940, entitled Oath of Czechoslovak Fighter Pilots, claimed we, Czechoslovaks, can be sometimes quarrelsome or rude, but we have one trait so strong it will always unite us and will always find us at the right place. We are loyal. We know it. The whole world knows it. This Ministry of Information film also paid tribute to the Czechoslovaks.
These are hurricanes of a Czechoslovak squadron whose pilots fight for us in the air. They have the reputation of cool and daring pilots with numerous victories over the Luftwaffe. They have their own units, but fly as part of the Royal Air Force, adapting themselves to British discipline and ways of life.
Sometimes, however, the RAF saw that zeal as recklessness in the battle, as Hurricane pilot Geoffrey Page remembers.
The Poles were madmen, at least we thought they were. They couldn't care less about orders from the ground. If they could see the enemy, they'd attack him. And very understandably, their country had been overrun, and they had a bitterness and a hatred which emanated from that. And I think probably the Czechs were motivated by the same sort of feeling. The French and Belgians, not so much. I mean, they were brave men. I'm not belittling that at all. But the Poles and Czechs, there was a burning hatred inside them. Very gallant men.
Ludwig Martel served alongside his British counterparts in 603 Squadron of the Royal Auxiliary Air Force.
Auxiliary pilots were extremely nice people. People who did flying because they loved to fly and they loved to form the auxiliary squadron. The 603 Squadron was very unusual because they come from City of Edinburgh and they remember old times of their Scots. So I came to it as a Pole, and I was very proud that I am Pole flying in the English so-called Scottish Squadron. What we had in our mind all the time, we were fighting in England, but we were fighting for Poland as well, because we knew that the people over there are suffering.
The Polish and Czechoslovak pilots tended to be older than the British and, as Craig Murray says, made use of their previous experience fighting the Germans.
They were actually more experienced in war than many of the RAF pilots were, so they were pretty seasoned as far as air fighting went. There was a general feeling of, certainly in some cases with the Poles, I think, hatred towards the Germans, and they just wanted to be up there and fighting. You could argue they were much more ready for it than many of the inexperienced British pilots were, because they'd had so much war experience so far in a relatively short period.
The Poles were better acquainted with Luftwaffe fighter tactics, formations and firepower than the British. According to Jacek Meinke, they were particularly known for shooting at shorter range than the RAF.
Polish fighter pilots decided to shoot from the closer distances just to get a better chance to hit the enemy. Polish tactic was different: to attack from the front, to attack quickly, just gain altitude after, regroup and use less ammunition, etc. Everything which I just listed, were small elements of the final success, was basically experience gained in real life situation British didn't have. So that was something which quickly Polish fighter pilots passed to British colleagues.
These aggressive tactics were not risk-free. The Poles lost 30 pilots during the battle. However, 303 became the highest-scoring squadron equipped with Hawker Hurricanes. Although it joined the battle a month later than most RAF squadrons, it shot down 126 German aircraft in only 42 days. With their glowing success, the foreign fighters, especially the Poles, attracted a lot of curiosity and attention. Reporters described them almost as celebrities, as dashing, gallant figures who were extremely popular with the local women. Some British pilots even pretended to be Polish to boost their chances of getting a date. This film was one of many made during the war that celebrated the new friendship between the Poles and their British hosts.
We, the Scots, and you, the Poles. We were curious to see for ourselves what sort of men you were. So we watched you march to your destination and were reassured when we saw that you came to our country not as refugees, but as a fully armed fighting unit. We heard your strange prayers echoing across our countryside.
Ludwig Martel went on to fly with other fighter squadrons and then settled in the UK after the war. He remembers his early days in Britain with fondness and pride.
We were welcomed with open arms. It squeezed my tear when I read that British people are friendly with the way to have us in England in 1940. I'm very pleased that we took a part in the Battle of Britain, because that was important. People didn't realize then, as they do now, how important it was. If we lost that battle in 1940, I don't think we'd be enjoying ourselves talking to each other today. We can live with it forever.
Sadly, the Polish pilots weren't able to publicly celebrate their bravery in the London Victory Parade after the war. By that time, Poland was under Soviet control. Under increasing pressure from Joseph Stalin, the British government did not invite the Poles to join the parade. For Ludwig Martel, it was a cause of lifelong regret.
I thought that we deserved the part in it. And irrespective of what the politician decide, that was unfair, and we will always remember that. But there's a lot of people who remember that and knows that, and are very, very sorry that it happened.
International airmen served in ever greater numbers with the RAF throughout the war, both in fighter command and in flying reconnaissance and bombing sorties over Germany and occupied Europe. The head of Fighter Command, Air Chief Marshal Hugh Dowding, had objected to the formation of the Polish fighter squadrons at the start of the war. At the end of it, however, he paid tribute to the Polish pilots. He wrote, "Had it not been for the magnificent material contributed by the Polish squadrons and their unsurpassed gallantry, I hesitate to say that the outcome of the Battle of Britain would have been the same." After the war, some Polish Air Force personnel remained in Britain, whilst others chose to return to Poland. However, as post-war tensions grew between the Western Allies and the Soviet Union, the men were treated with suspicion as potential traitors by the authorities. Barred from flying, some were imprisoned, Others found they were unable to get work. Jacek Mańka's grandfather, Ryszard, was among them.
My grandfather decided that he shall return. Some of his family members survived, so he decided to come back. It was a very difficult decision, but he was very low rank. So he assumed that nothing wrong gonna happen to him. In fact, he had no real job for next 10 years. He had to go and report to secret police. He had very miserable life, in fact, at least until Stalin died.
Despite his years of hardship, Ryszard Kwiatkowski remained proud of his record in the Second World War. Jacek Mańka grew up listening to his grandfather's war stories, which inspired him to become an airline pilot himself. In 2014, after his grandfather's death, Jacek flew a Spitfire from Britain to Poland, painted it the markings of a Polish squadron in tribute to the veterans. In the next episode, The Blitz.
Besides the raging inferno you see here now, nearly 1,500 other fires were dealt with in London alone on this same night.
We'll learn how the Germans shifted their focus to British cities and industry. What did it take to endure the Luftwaffe's nightly offensive, both in the air and on the ground? And what was the RAF's Bomber Command doing in the Battle of Britain to strike back? This is an RAF benevolent film production by Chalk and Blade. It is co-written and presented by me, Victoria Taylor. The producer is Eva Krizyak. The mix and theme music are by Alex Portfelix. And the executive producers are Laura Sheeta and Logan Armandoni. Eugene Sharman's interview is courtesy of Derbyshire County Council, Buxton Museum and Art Gallery. The oral history clips are courtesy of the Imperial War Museum. The diary of pilot officer Stanislav Fejfar and translation of the Czech BBC News report from 1940 were provided by Jan Kosak. Recordings of Churchill's speeches are copyright of the BBC, and other original audio clips are courtesy of the BFI National Film Archive and the Imperial War Museum. The historical consultant is Stuart Hadaway at the Royal Air Force Air Historical Branch.
This podcast is brought to you by the Royal Air Force Benevolent Fund, the RAF's leading welfare charity. We are there for all members of the RAF family in their time of need, from those serving today to former members of the RAF, as well as their partners and dependent children. If you know of someone who might need some support, or to find out more, please visit our website, rafbf.org.